In last week's budget, the provincial government announced that it was raising the fuel tax by 2.5 cents per liter. This is the first increase in the fuel tax since 1993. Earlier this year, environmentalist Peter Miller argued that a higher fuel tax is the best way to pay for infrastructure costs in Manitoba. Peter Miller is a retired professor in philosophy from the University of Winnipeg and chair of Green Action Centre's policy committee, and he joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Karen.
The promise had promised that any increase in gas taxes will be used to pay for road infrastructure. And with nearly $50 million in new gas tax revenue, many people were hoping to see a significant expansion in infrastructure in this year's budget. With the fuel tax that was introduced last week by the provincial government, are drivers now going to be paying enough for the infrastructure that they use?
No. As the premier said, it's a twofer. That is, they're going to spend twice as much as they collect in the fuel tax on the road budget. And we think that doesn't make sense, that basically the road budget should be paid by the road users, which are the motor vehicles. And the fuel tax is the primary way of collecting that. There are other ways, but that's the primary way.
So would you have liked to have seen a higher increase than 2.5 cents?
Well, certainly. And there still is some opportunity to give the city the power to add its own tax. The Free Press pointed out that Vancouver charges 9% on top of whatever other taxes there are. And, of course, they have a SkyTrain that they fund with that. Wouldn't it be nice if we had, if the city had the ability to tax and provide the proper infrastructure for us?
Is there evidence that if you do have a higher fuel tax, it'll have a positive impact on people's behavior and the environment, that people will drive less because of that?
Well, yes. I think on various occasions when the prices have gone up for market reasons, there has been a cutback in driving. The Vehicle Standards Advisory Board that was appointed by the province to review fuel economy pointed out that Manitoba had a much higher increase than the average for Canada, about four or five times as much in a period of a little under a decade. And that's indicative. I mean, there may be other factors, but that's certainly indicative of that cheap gas means lots of driving. Not only lots of driving, but also larger vehicles, larger than people need.
For people who are on have a lower income or have a more limited income, is a fuel tax regressive in that they may have less options and need to drive to get to work or to do essential things?
Mm-hmm. Harvey Stevens wrote a letter to the Free Press in which he indicated he'd done an analysis in which if you compare it with adding a percent to sales tax versus a fuel tax to raise equivalent amounts of money, the fuel tax was less regressive than the sales tax would be. Also, you can think of ways in which you can try to deal with the poor. Reduced bus passes, refunds on the income tax, or free bus tickets, or there are lots of things that can be done.
As well as the gas tax, for a municipality, are there other options for a city like Winnipeg to reduce the subsidies or the encouragement that people may receive to drive?
We were quite pleased to see that Mayor Cates seemed to have bought our argument that, at least in terms of justice, it's drivers who should be paying for the road infrastructure. I think, there are different ways in which that can be done. Tolls is one way. If you had to go to toll booths, that would be pretty unworkable. But nowadays, you can collect it automatically with a transponder. Cars drive past a point. That's recorded, and a bill is sent monthly to cover their use of the road. So there are lots of things. You could raise the parking tax. except the city councilors said they do not have the power to do any of this. They can't add a fuel tax. They can't add a toll. They can't differentially raise the taxes on parking spaces because the province hasn't given them that power. And so it seems to me the second shoe that needs to fall is that the province gives them some of those taxing authorities so that you don't have the ridiculous situation of a 34% increase in road infrastructure spending and no increase in fuel tax versus a 20-cent addition to the transit to cover that.
In terms of the provincial government, the provincial budget, just one other thing I wanted to ask, besides the fuel tax, was about the operating cuts that we might see. And in the budget, the government did announce that most departments will see some cuts, and they weren't clear which ones, but I think it'll probably include conservation because they talked about, you know, services like health and education that wouldn't. If we did see cuts to conservation, do you have any concerns about what the province may be spending less on, things like environmental inspections or parks or other activities?
Well, certainly you are worried about those things. Actually, I think they did increase park fees. Parks have been free for a number of years, so I think on parks they have a modest increase in expenditures and an increase in fees there. So the parks might be okay. Certainly, there are a wide range of environmental services that the government provides, and frankly, I haven't looked at what the fallout might be.
I just wanted to talk about the federal budget as well, and there's been a lot of controversy over the changes to environmental assessments, including a reduction in the review time for major projects, as well as what the government says less duplication between federal and provincial assessments. Why is it important to have separate federal and provincial environmental assessments done?
I'm not sure that you couldn't make a case for integrated assessments, provided they're not lowest common denominator, but highest. In other words, they would have to meet the requirements of both levels of government, and they would have to have the adequate research and soundness and so on. In the past, in an entirely different era, we used to look to the federal government as providing the backup for a weak provincial environmental assessment. You know, either level of government can produce a weak assessment. And I have nothing against a more efficient process, provided it does the job. And doing the job means adequate consultation, both with the general public and with First Nations, and an adequate scientific review and an adequate vetting of that scientific review by interveners.
One other thing that came out in the budget but has also been talked about by the federal government recently is the work of environmental groups and how, you know, their political activities may not be appropriate given their charitable status. And in this budget, the federal government established an $8 million fund for Canada Revenue Agency to monitor the charitable activities of environmental groups. And as someone who's been involved in environmental groups with charitable status, does this provide some sort of chill over their legitimate activities of what environmental groups do?
It certainly does. And a number of organizations that have been active on the pipeline issue have felt that. In fact, Forest Ethics seems to have dropped its charitable status and gone for a legal engagement of a challenge to the government on that. Clayton Ruby is willing to take that one on, and he says we'll win.
And I imagine it's, you know, for some organizations that are doing, you know, education or other activities that are legitimate for charitable status, there might be a lot more time and resources spent on trying to prove that you're a charity rather than being able to do the work that you're being funded to do.
Yeah. I mean, what's the line between education and advocacy? I mean, there are some rules in the current regulations. You can't advocate for a particular candidate or party, but you can advocate for consideration of what you think are important public policy issues. There's also a criterion that you can't spend more than 10% of your resources, I think, on that kind of public advocacy. So we've been able to operate with that. Some organizations divide themselves in two and have an advocacy side and a education and research side that meets the CRA requirements. So I think the existing requirements are fine. And but what you worry about is that one is that the they may change the rule. For instance, if you come out against, say, the Enbridge pipeline, that seems to be the issue du jour, that they will take that as political advocacy against the conservative government or something like that and disqualify it. And that's what would be very chilling.
The federal government has also been criticized for not even mentioning climate change in its recent budget. And for the province, in the budget papers that were released by the province of Manitoba, aside from the gas tax increase, there's little mention of even the word environment. What needs to be done to better integrate the environment with government policy at budget time?
Well, in our budget brief, we said that those sustainability principles should be explicit. And it does seem as though they were dropped from the budget goals and the premier's economic goals and so on. None of that was there, even though they do have programs that still promote that, like the some of the bioenergy programs and so on. So you do need those principles front and center, and you need not pick a different principle like affordability for low-income people or stimulating the economy or something like that and kind of forget about that. You do need to integrate the principles. You need policies that satisfy multiple criteria. And that means that you have to have people who think about these issues in the fray, if you will, discussing how to reconcile them. Green Action Center has for years worked on principles of sustainability and justice, certainly concerned with affordability and low-income folks, also with cost savings, efficiencies, stimulating the economy. We have ideas on all of those things in an integrated way, and we'd like a forum in which we could express those views and try to persuade people who may have a different view. I often find that people have kind of simple-minded and mistaken views. For instance, the pay-as-you-drive insurance, in which would base premiums on the distance that you drive, the assumption is that that would somehow screw, if I can say that, suburban or rural drivers. And it wouldn't necessarily, because each class would be in comparison with itself. So those elementary things, which are part of, I mean, there's a huge literature reflecting on these issues, and somehow it doesn't seem to make itself into the financial thinking of government, and we'd like to see more of that.
Well, thanks for coming in today and talking to us about it.
Great. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Peter Miller. He is the chair of the policy committee at Green Action Center, and you're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.